All right, well, welcome everybody. This is Numerical Methods. I am Dustin Lang. Also teaching with me will be Eric Schnetter. He's in a meeting at this time, so I think he won't be coming today. But I think we'll be more or less switching off. Switching off topics. So like I'll give one topic, he'll give the next, and so on. So he'll be, you'll hear from Eric a lot in the course as well. Let's start off with a very bad dad joke. What does it take to make a squid laugh? What does it take to make a squid laugh? Tentacles. 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 yes, they're bad. You can bring your own terrible jokes if you like, as a revenge or whatever. Okay, so so today, this week is going to be a little bit of getting set up and a bit of introduction. So it's going to be like a little bit chaotic and a little bit like just a little bit kind of some annoying things to set up. But hopefully things will get more into content in the weeks in the week after that. So I wanted to basically do a little intro to the symmetry computer we'll be using, Jupyter Hub and Git today. The bulk of the course is going to be in this programming language called Julia that Eric loves, and I am so on. Eric will give that intro to Julia. So today I basically just wanted to do the part about getting a little bit of setup and then also using Git and GitHub for version control and collaboration, which is sort of not really like numerical methods per se, but it's just sort of a good, you know, practice for computing or for doing computational work or kind of any work actually. And it's sort of like, this is kind of an obvious course for it to go into. I will give you the, I'll send out the link to these slides after the lecture. In future lectures, I'll try to send out the link beforehand so that you can have them, you know, before lecture, go through them at your own pace or whatever. So these links aren't really very useful to you right now, but when you have the document, there's just a few different, different resources for some of the things I'll talk about today. In particular, the Carpentries organization has some good lessons on these things that are sort of geared towards scientists. So they're kind of assuming probably a level of knowledge that matches what you have. Okay, good. Okay, so for a lot of the work we're going to do in this course, we'll probably try to use the Symmetry computer. And this is a cluster that Perimeter Institute owns. It lives at the University of Waterloo in a big, extremely loud machine room. It is so loud you have to wear hearing protection or you just will damage your ears because there's just fans blowing everywhere because computers get hot and the fans are desperately trying to keep everything cool. There's a big, the Graham supercomputer that's part of the Compute Canada or Digital Research Alliance also lives in this room and fills up 30 of these racks. So in these like computer machine rooms, the basic unit are these like racks of computers. So Symmetry is a fairly small computer and it lives in three racks. And like basically these ones are, each of these holds four computers. And then these are like four special ones. That's a big, like a disk drive array and so on. So, so Symmetry has about 100 computers and is reserved for people at Perimeter Institute to do their computational work. Wonder if we can get rid of that thing in the corner, but that's okay. So for large scale work, people will use what's called a batch scheduler, which is kind of like a very old school kind of computing where you write a text file that describes the computing you want to do and you submit it to the cluster to run at some later time. It's sort of like back in the very early days of computing, you would like bring your program on punch cards to the computing center and give them your program, and they would run it overnight or something, and then give you the results back the next day. This is sort of very much in that line of like, this is sort of for bulk computing. That's how people use this cluster. Like you submit these batch jobs, and then they'll get scheduled to run on, you might ask for, I want to run on 10 nodes for 4 hours. So it'll reserve 10 nodes for 4 hours, run your job, and then give you back the results. And everyone else who wants to run their stuff also goes in the queue, and then things get run in time. We're not really going to do any of that, I think, in this course. So instead, we'll just be using mostly Jupyter Hub, which you've probably seen before in other contexts, these sort of notebook kind of computing environments. We'll see in a minute. We also have a remote desktop thing on Symmetry, but that's not actually used as much, I think. So I think for the most part, we'll just stick to Jupyter Hub. There is some information about Symmetry on the PyOn intranet site, system site. It looks like people basically all have their computers. So if you haven't, so Symmetry accounts are like you use the same login as your normal Perimeter Institute account, but you need to be separately signed up to use Symmetry, which you can do by sending an email to the help desk just saying, I'm a PSI student taking numerical methods. Can I please have access to Symmetry? And they'll, set that flag on your account, and then you'll be able to log into Symmetry. If you, so maybe I should go through this and show you what this looks like. I think that's probably a little. I think I probably don't need to do that. Let me just sort of mention the one thing that's annoying is for the sim like when you go to log into Symmetry, your web browser will tell you that the security certificate is. It'll like raise some flag about it saying, don't trust the security certificate. I'm going to tell you to do something that nobody on the IT team should ever tell you to do, but just it's actually fine. Add security exception or proceed to the site anyway. It's basically just because Symmetry is only available inside the Perimeter Institute network, so then it's hard to get a security certificate that is sort of private. So we're working on fixing that, but it's been taking a long time. So actually, let me just show you this real quick. So symmetry.py.local. I mentioned this on a previous slide but didn't say it. To reach Symmetry, you have to either be in the building on the PI resident network, or if you're connecting from home, you have to use the VPN. Can give you info details about that. But And that's basically just because it's kind of for security, it's just way easier for us to kind of keep it inside the secret Perimeter Institute network rather than having it exposed to the whole world. So I can sign in with my usual Perimeter Institute credentials. Oh, great. That's not supposed to happen, of course. Does that always happen?
Yeah, when you try to show something.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, the demo effect that. Okay, so yeah, then you should do. So Jupyter Hub has this notion of a server, which is like not a great name, but basically. Whoops, that's not what I wanted to do either. Sorry, I wanted to. Oh, why is. Okay, I want to go start my server. Okay, apparently I have should not have tried to show you this because apparently this is not working at all.
Austin,
Yes.
I can't access it with the symmetry py local. Should I do something?
Type an HTTPS.
Oh yeah, it does have to be HTTPS. Okay, well, apparently.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm sorry.
It's time to use ChatGPT.
Yeah. Apparently, Jupyter Hub has also been taking a good break on the vacation. So let's just ignore. Let's just move on. We don't need to do that for the rest of today. Okay, great. Wonderful. Okay, let's leave. Let's ignore symmetry for now then. I'm sorry.
Just a question. I've noticed a lot of students didn't manage to log in. Just so the first thing they need to do is to contact the IT, right?
Yeah. Right. So just an email to help@perimeterinstitute.ca saying, I'm a PSI student. Can I please have access to symmetry? And I'll set you up. And Mohammed, this is a 1 hour block, is that right? Yeah, okay, good. Thanks. Just wanted to, I know there's some different sized blocks in the schedules. Okay. Okay, so let's move on to talk about using Git and GitHub for version control and collaboration. Hopefully this will go a little more smoothly. Maybe I can do a poll. Has anyone do, do who uses GitHub or Git on a regular basis? Okay, about half. Okay, good. Way to go. Sorry to be repeating things for you. So yeah, basically, using version control is really great for science, for scientific codes. For all kinds of work, but like for science especially, because a lot of our work is about communicating our results with other people, and it's also really great to be able to say exactly what you were running and what you were looking at when you produced a plot or when you generated a result. It's really nice to be able to say, oh, I was using this specific version of the code. I know what I was using, and I can tell other people. And if I find a bug later that affects my results, I can figure out how it affects the results and be able to reproduce it and explain what happened and so on. So it's a really great practice. And sometimes you will have files like it's my code final version 7 with that bug fixed. And you don't really want to be dealing with stuff like that. So keeping your stuff in a version control system is a really great way to kind of be able to have that whole history of what you've been working on and be able to refer to the code at a previous time. I'll say code a lot, but you could also think about it as for documents as well. Like, so some people would like write their thesis or something like that in keep it in a Git repository because it helps them to keep the history and other things like that. So yeah, it's also like just as a kind of built-in backup, it's pretty great. If you're working on different computers, it's actually a convenient way of just moving code between computers. And then with GitHub, it then becomes easy to publish or share your code and collaborate with other people. So that's sort of the idea of why we want to talk about this and work on and like show you how it works a little bit. A few things about Git. There was a time, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, when there were a few different of these version control systems still in competition, where there were multiple ones in play. And then it basically all narrowed down so that Git basically won. It kind of has a, I would say, pretty well-deserved reputation for being unintuitive. If some of these things don't make sense, it's it's not just you. Git is kind of can be confusing at times. There's this kind of useful website called dangitgit.com that has it's probably a little bit more, it's sort of like has a few common like problem cases or like I got stuck in some weird way, how do I get out of it? So it's pretty handy there. Okay, so some of the terminology you'll run across, a repository is sort of all the files you want to manage. So usually like a whole project, like, maybe numerical methods course is one, might be one repository, or like if you're writing up like a thesis then or a paper, then that would like naturally be a repository. And then Git is sort of built on this notion of a commit, which is basically a change to those files. Think of like a repository and its history as just like a whole list of changes that you've made to those files. You know, I added this file, and then I added a bunch of text, and then I added a figure, and then I added a bunch of things. And that whole list of things that list of commits is your history or your repository. You can always go back to the state at a previous commit. The Git system is distributed in the sense that there's like no central like server or place where your repository lives. But in practice, the way most people use it is to actually then just re-centralize it again and say, we're going to use GitHub as this like central place where we keep the like canonical version of it or like the authoritative version of it. And then, there's this notion of pushing and pulling commits around to move changes to different places. So one kind of downside, I guess, is that they work best on if your repository contains plain old text files. It doesn't really work great on like Word documents or something like that. Because basically it wants to keep differences between files, like I added a bunch of lines of text, or I removed a bunch of lines of text, or whatever. It doesn't really work great on other file formats. You still get the advantages of, being able to move stuff between places and having timestamps and so on, but it won't be very useful in telling you like what the difference between one version and the next is. Whereas for text files, it has there's a lot of good. Help for saying, oh, what's the difference between those two versions? Oh, I added these three lines. I fixed this bug on this line of code. Did you have a question?
Oh, no.
No? Okay. That's fine. And basically the reason that Git won this competition between the different version control system things is that it's pretty good at merging changes. So if, you know, so this works great if people are collaborating on something and if different people are working in different parts of the document, it has no trouble merging in their changes and making sure that they work well together. which is, you know, is really great if you're working on a team, but also is handy if you're just, if it's just you, or just you and a friend working on an assignment or whatever. Okay, so that's kind of the, yeah, a little bit of the setup. Okay, so here's the part where it gets, where there's a bit of a, where it gets a little bit messy. Let's see. I'm gonna ignore all of that because that's not working for us today. It looks like most of you have your laptops. If you could go to github.com and if you don't already, create yourself an account. And then, let's see. There's a tutorial session tomorrow, so I think we'll use that to do some of the follow-up on this. So if you have trouble getting anything going today, we can try to sort it out in person tomorrow at the tutorial session, which is tomorrow afternoon, 3:45, I think. okay, so so I'm sorry, this is not really, I wanted to do this on Symmetry and on Jupyter Hub, so that's not really what we want to do here. So there's this annoying thing where GitHub is basically trying to move away from having people use normal passwords. They're trying to get like people to use other like stronger authentication things, so it's like there's an extra thing that you have to set up. I understand that it's annoying and weird. But we all just have to do it. Okay, so I'll show you what that looks like. So on, if you, let me. So they basically like eliminated passwords and then they made this thing that's sort of like a password, except you have to like jump through a bunch of hoops to generate it. So I'll show you what that looks like. Basically you go, once you're logged into GitHub, if you go under the account sort of thing, down to settings, down at the very bottom is one called developer settings. And then under there is personal access tokens. And a personal access token is like basically a password. So except that instead of being a password you choose, you have to go generate new token. Classic. I will call it PSI demo. It'll ask to expire it after some time. I don't want that. Um, And we want just that one, I think, repo. Yes. Okay. I will update the notes with these steps, okay? I'm sorry for this. Okay, so then we can go generate token. And then basically what it does is gives you this huge long string. And you have to like copy and paste that somewhere useful, like save it somewhere for yourself. And you'll have to like copy and paste it in a couple of places in place of a password. So it's really kind of annoying.
Oh, Dustin, could you repeat what did you do there?
Yeah, sure.
I really fell behind.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Okay, so we go... So hidden behind the Perimeter Institute square here at the top on the GitHub.
Just go. Yeah.
He's got that big menu. It's down to settings.
Yes.
Hey, Eric. This is Eric Schnetter.
Do you mind if I just take a look for him?
Yes, of course. Here, let me.
I just want to do that thing. Hello, my name is Eric Schneider. I'm the other teacher of the course. Sorry that I'm late today, but just today. And I think I'll be teaching the class tomorrow morning as I have got introducing the tutorial. There's a tutorial tomorrow afternoon, right?
I think that's right. I'm.
Very good.
We need to. Okay.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, you missed the excitement, Eric. Jupyter Hub is acting up, so.
We're trying to show Jupyter Hub on symmetry.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, it didn't work.
That's GitHub now.
Yeah. So I'm trying to show. It's so annoying to get the personal access tokens working on GitHub because you can't use passwords anymore.
You need MFA.
Or something. So it's.
Did you manage to get them through it? Or
we no. Okay. I'm gonna.
So
I'm.
If you want to do this tomorrow, I can now jump in and give an introduction to Julia in the second part.
I think I'm okay. Like I'll try to.
Okay.
Barrel ahead for
I'll
a little bit.
I'll be.
Okay. Thank you. But yeah, I might tag you in. Okay. So yeah, under. Your settings, there's a settings thing.
Yes.
Midway down. And then at the very bottom on the left-hand side, there's developer settings. And then under that is personal access tokens. And under that is tokens classic. So you want to generate a new token, classic one, give it a note or a name, PSI demo 2, turn off the expiration probably, go no expiration, let's live dangerously, and select repo, which is short for repository. So basically this password can do all the things on repositories like check in and out code, which is all you need it to do. Okay. And then down to the bottom and generate token. And then it will only show you this once. So copy and paste that. And save it somewhere. Just save it in my little Scratch file. Okay. Oops. Yeah. And I'm going to delete the other one because I'm not going to use that. Okay. So basically, then. then that horrible string becomes basically like a password. There's another way to set up access that is a little bit easier, but is a little bit more specific to Windows machines and Linux machines and so on, Macs. So I'm not going to try to do that today, but we can try to maybe do that in the tutorial session tomorrow when it's easier to do things one-on-one. Okay. Okay, so with all of that, I guess I'll go through creating a new GitHub repository and checking it out on a laptop. It's not too bad. That part's not nearly as annoying as this part of setting up the passkeys. So if you go back to your top level GitHub account, sorry, I should make that bigger. There, like that. If you go new repository, it will, that you will need to give it a name. For fun, they'll suggest one to you. Since we're just doing this for kicks, you can go ahead and use the example ones because they're often kind of cute. Ideal Enigma, yes, good, very good. You can choose between public or private, in other words, show it to the world or keep it private to your own account. And it's probably easiest to click yes to this part of add a README file. And then you can leave the rest of it leave the rest of it as it is. Okay, so excuse me. So that has now created this new repository in my account. So you can see the URL is github.com/my username/the repository name. And it shows you, okay, so it's got the repository name and the content. So it started with just a nearly empty README file. And let's see. So for simple text files, there's a built-in editor on GitHub. So let me just make an edit, and then it'll check it in as a change, and then we can look at what that looks like and how you can explore. Get back to a previous version or whatever. This won't be very exciting because not going to change very much, but this is my first change to this file. I am excited. There. Okay, so I can then go commit changes. It will ask me to give a description of what I just changed. If you're working on something more elaborate than a simple text document, then you might, it actually will do yourself favors to actually give it a description about what you changed. For example, fixed bug about boundary conditions. If I go back to the main repository change, repository, you'll see that it's showing the, most recent version. This is my first change to the file. I'm excited. you can also see it's got this list of two commits. So this is basically all of the changes that have happened here over time. So going, I guess, from bottom to top, from oldest to newest. So this was when it was first created 2 minutes ago, and then I made a change just now. In larger projects, it's not uncommon to have like thousands and thousands of commits. So it's kind of useful to be able to track like, oh, what did we change over time? Which things were there for the version that we used for the paper? And what did we fix since then? Things like that. Okay, so that was just using the built-in editor on the GitHub site. The real fun comes when you actually check out the code onto your computer and then work on it there, and then move changes back and forth between your computer and GitHub. So I will do that now. The thing, this gets a little messy because to do this, you'll want a terminal on your laptop. So if you're using a Mac, you want a new terminal session. If you're on a Windows machine, you want Linux subsystem for Mac, Windows, is that what it's called? Windows subsystem for Linux?
I guess.
I forget which way it's, Windows subsystem for Linux?
Probably like Linux subsystem.
That one, that one. Thank you. The name doesn't make sense, but I can never remember which way around it is. If you're using a Linux box, it's just a terminal. Okay, so to do that, you'll go under code.
Yes.
And what we're doing here is called cloning the repository. So we're like making a copy of it on some other computer. And you can either do that. There are different ways for doing that. Basically, different ways of doing the authentication or security. The way we're going to do is HTTPS today. So copy that URL, and then actually, I should have. I'm on Mac, so I'm going to use a new terminal. Now I need to change the font size on that so you can actually see it. That's okay, right? Yeah, that's okay. Okay, so step two is do you actually have the Git program installed? So you may or may not on your computer. Again, this is something we can sort out in the tutorial if it's not working for you. I do. So I would go git clone, and then I copy and pasted that, the URL that it popped up when I went to git clone. So so basically I'm doing this git clone with this URL of my repository. And what that's gonna do is check out a copy of it and make a copy on my computer. And you can see that like Git is not super user friendly on telling you what it's doing. It's got a bunch of these like enumerating objects, counting objects, compressing objects, blah, 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 receiving objects, done. But what it, so my repository was called Ideal Enigma. Yep.
So I'm generally very confused right now. So
okay,
now
sure.
We are setting up and like practicing with Git, right? And so you said that like all of us pretty much have the Windows computer, so do we need to download like Linux virtual machines or something?
Or actually, can offer a solution for that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you offer only like Mac, like terminal commands, we can just translate it to Windows and use VS Code instead. Is that possible?
Yes.
Just use the same thing but in VS Code.
Interesting. I don't know about that.
We'll talk about that tomorrow, like a workshop.
Sure. That seems like a really workable solution. Yeah, so the other way is to do what it's Windows subsystem for Linux, right? That's the thing to do. So what do you
for Linux?
Is that pre-installed or is that a thing you have to install? I'm sorry, I don't
have to install it.
Okay. Okay, I did not realize that.
Yeah, so like people will need to set up the thing, or if they use like VS Code, they can just clone the thing into VS Code and use the bash there manipulate with the project, basically.
Okay, good, thank you. Okay, that's a good, that's a really good suggestion.
Yeah, like to provide more flexibility.
Uh-huh.
So I looked a bit into using VS Code with Julia, and my wife, professional software engineer, taught me how to use the GitHub extension in VS Code, and I can give a presentation of that tomorrow afternoon during the tutorial, if you don't like the command line. So that seems to be a way in which professionals are doing it. Of course, she still needs to use the command line from time to time because it is like that. Have you shown them the particular git coverage? What is it? Own tank git?
Yes.
So you still need to do that from time to time. But if you like VS Code, graphical user interfaces, and so on, that's also available. But I'm not going to use it in my lectures.
Okay.
I think it is available for free. The basic code base is open source available for free. Microsoft, I think it's called CodeCube or something. And Microsoft repackages it as VS Code with a lot of extensions that are very useful, but I think it's still available for free. We don't need the license. It's not that Microsoft is another thing. Visual Studio, that is very expensive, but VS Code is available for free. And we should check the license tomorrow. I don't want to leave people as well.
Okay. Maybe I should just. Maybe I'll just continue in like a demo, but not like. Not ask you to try to follow along, and then we can try to get like stuff installed and all of those things working in the tutorial session tomorrow. I know that's not very satisfying, but just in the interest of kind of doing something useful in the next like 10 minutes or so. Okay.
We should go to IT, right? What you suggested?
To get symmetry access, yeah, that's right. For the Jupyter Hub thing, I have to fix it.
Would it be better if you collected all the names and email addresses of the people who want to get access, and then you confirm to IT that they are actually SCI students, and then they have to get, they handle one request, and one request. I think that's what they did last year.
Okay. Like I said, a little bit chaotic today. I'm sorry for that. I was hoping it would be much easier if everybody was able to use Jupyter Hub. But alas, computers do not cooperate with us. Okay, so I'm. I guess I'll just do sort of a demo kind of thing, just to try to give you a sense of like what it looks like to sort of work with Git on a day-to-day basis. So I've done this Git clone. So that's created this, it's checked it out into a directory. named the same thing as the repository. So I can go into Ideal Enigma, and I can see my my good old README file. Instead of just working on that, I'm going to make a list of this is sort of a silly one, but I'm going to make just a list of good names for pets, and then you can shout things out for me. It could be lines of code or whatever, but for a demo, it doesn't really. We just need some content. So I'm just going to start adding a few lines to this file, and then I'll just show you like moving changes around and resolving conflicts and so on. Okay, so if you have a pet at home, shout out its name. Violet is my cat. my cat when I was a kid was named Sneakers. And a dog was named Shadow. Okay. Has anybody else got a pet name they want to share? Nobody? Okay. So if I want Git to track this file, I have to tell it that I want it to pay attention to that file and start tracking changes to it. So I can do that with Git add and then the file name. So then now Git will start. Oh, actually, before I do that, a good general purpose or like a good command to look at is git status, and that will just tell you kind of what's going on in your current in this current directory. But again, it's git, so it's all a little bit cryptic. So I haven't really told you about branches yet, but you're on branch main, and it says it's up to date with the origin, which is in this case was we checked it out from GitHub, so GitHub is the origin. It's saying there's some files in this directory that I'm not tracking, so pet names isn't being tracked. And so that's sort of the relevant thing right now. So if I now go, if I tell Git that I want it to now start tracking that file, I can write git add and then the file name. And now if I go status, it'll say these are changes to be committed. So it's like you've made there's a new file that hasn't been committed yet. And so there's sort of like one more step than you think there should be, or maybe two more steps than you think there should be. So after I've added the file, I also have to say, so I could then continue editing the file. I could continue adding, you know, things to my file. And when I'm ready to like commit my change, like say I'm done working on this particular thing, you commit. I think if you just write git commit, it then wants you to write a little description or a little message about what these changes are. And you can ignore all the stuff below it in the file. And I'm gonna just write initial list of pets. And then I'll save that. And so then it's, now what it's done is committed it to this local checked out copy I have. So I have it locally, but I haven't, it's not on GitHub yet. So now I think if I go git status, it will tell me, what?
Don't you have to add it to your staging? Did you type git add?
Yeah, I thought I did. Okay, so the other thing that's useful is git diff, which tells you what's different in mine and what have I changed. Oh, that's weird. It, what? Okay, so this is right. Git is sometimes unintuitive and weird. Why did it? Okay, I'm surprised. I didn't think I was going to do that. I added it, and then I made a change. Yeah. And it committed the add, but not the change? How did I manage that?
Yeah, maybe you will need to pull it.
I guess because I just... I think it's maybe because I just did a git commit and not a commit minus a or the file name.
I mean, git commit should work as well.
Yeah, I would have thought that. Okay, so this is not a great advertisement for how good this program is, but I normally would go git commit minus a, which is git commit everything in this directory, or you can also go git commit and then the file that you want to commit the changes to. I think maybe that's why it only committed the add and not my changes.
But
yeah.
Do you use git add first?
Yeah, I did.
And then you do git commit minus m and then you leave a comment.
Yeah, so right. So if I normally I would go git commit minus a, like commit all the changes to all the files that are being tracked. And then it'll open up my editor for me to write a message. I forgot Fluffy. If you find it annoying to have it for it to always be opening up your editor to have you write a message, you can do that. That's what minus m does. So if you can write, you can do write git commit minus a, and then minus m and just give a message like I forgot Fluffy. Okay, so now hopefully when I go git status, it will say, it's not listing any files that have changed, but it's saying your branch is ahead of origin master by two commit, or origin main by two commits. Use git push to publish your local commits. So again, it's not a super user-friendly or intuitive message, but it's saying basically, I have two changes that haven't been sent upstream to GitHub. Okay, so the other thing that's handy is git log, which tells you what has, what things you've, like which commits you've made recently. So this is showing like four changes, basically. The first one being the very first thing, then an edit to the README, and then my initial list of pets, and then poor old Fluffy who was left behind. Okay, good, yeah. Okay, so now I'm going to go git push to send my changes up to GitHub. And again, not super helpful what it's telling you there, but basically, in the end, it's completed without any error messages. So let me then flip back to GitHub. and when I reload this page, I should now have that file, and it'll show you the commit message for the last change you've made. Changed that 2 minutes ago. We last changed the README 19 minutes ago. And now you can see I've got four commits here. I'll show one final thing, which is just merging changes when it works well. There's another case when it doesn't work well, and then that's a little bit more complicated. But this is kind of, one of the reasons that that GitHub became very popular is that it deals with this really well. So let's make changes to the code in two different places at the same time. Code here is just my list of pet names. Okay, so I'm going to make a change on just my computer. I'm going to do that at the beginning of the file, and then using the GitHub editor, I'm going to add stuff to the end of the file, and then we'll see that it deals with that case just fine. But for that, I'm going to need some names from the crowd. Come on. Some of you had pets when you were kids. Have pets now. No. No. All right. Okay. All right, my neighbor's dog is named Bo. Okay, so I'm going to save that. So that's only on, oh no, and then I'm going to commit it as well. With a, just a message, add Bo. Okay, so that's committed on my local checkout. And now, if I go to, I can use the online editor and make a change. Whoops, I don't want to change that file. I want to change the other one. I think if I look at, yeah, so can also edit this file. And you know, this one doesn't have that change because it's only on my computer. It's not on GitHub. So let's add something to the end. Actually, I'll show you both of these things at once. So let's add one to the end. Lola is my neighbor's other neighbor's dog. And I'm going to add one at the beginning as well, a different one. Oh, I'm running out of running out of names.
My name is Ginger.
You're good. Yeah, you've been holding out on me, Eric. You showed me your picture of your dog at lunchtime.
OK, the dog's name is Rainer.
Is what?
Rainer.
Rainer.
R-A-I-N-E-R.
Okay.
It happened to be a German name, but my wife didn't know that right.
Good, thank you. Okay, so in this version of, in the GitHub version of the code, I've added Rainer to the beginning and Lola to the end. And then on my laptop I've only added Bo to the beginning. So let's see what happens when these merge. The way I'm going to do that is, let's see. So I'm going to have the GitHub one commit first. So this is adding Rainer and Lola. And then I'm going to go back to my checked out version. And so now on my version, I only have Bo added. So normally after I committed my change, I would go, okay, I want to now push my changes up to GitHub, right? I've made my changes locally, I want to save them. And you get this. So it's saying, again, like super not helpful error message. But basically it's saying rejected, failed to push some, like basically failed to push some of these changes upstream. Updates were rejected because the remote contains work that you do not have locally. So basically what that, which is, you know, just what happened, like we made a change to the version on GitHub that we don't have, that I don't have on my laptop. So the way we fix that is to go git pull, which says pull the changes from upstream down to my laptop. And right. Okay, again, super not helpful. So I've done this git pull and it's saying, you have divergent branches and need to specify how to reconcile them. So this is a one-time setup thing. Again, one of these like annoying setup or annoying like getting started things. But we want to do this first one. It's basically saying, how do you want to deal with how do you want to deal with things when this happens? And there's sort of three different options that it doesn't explain to you what you which one you would normally use or what they're for. So I'm just going to take the first one, merge, and then I'm going to try the git pull again. Okay, so it's now pulled down the code from GitHub and noticed that there, and then tried to merge in our changes, and it said conflict. Merge conflict in petnames.txt. Automatic merge failed, fix the conflicts, and then commit the result. So basically, let's have a look at the file. So here's what it's done. It was able to add Lola to the end without trouble, right? Because on GitHub, I added something to the beginning and something to the end. And on my local version, I only added something to the beginning. So it was able to automatically merge the one at the end. But then at the beginning, it said, oh, on yours, you made this change. And then upstream, they made that change. And then, because basically it like changes to the same part of the file. So it doesn't really know what to do with it. Like which one, should one of them come first? Should one of them overwrite the other? So basically, it doesn't do anything, or like it makes this, writes this, you know, mess into your file and says you deal with it. And so then, in this case, I'm just going to deal with it by keeping them both. So I'm just going to like delete these markers that it left in the file, and then I've got, you know, the changes from the two places. But basically, that's because, you know, it can't automatically decide how to deal with those changes, so then it just sort of says, here's what happened in the two places. You fix it, and then tell me you're done. I've fixed it. I'm going to save it, and then I will commit. I think it's just commit -a as usual. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, I've already gone over time. I apologize. I was watching the time and then I lost it. Okay. Okay, now finally, if I do a git push, that should succeed. And then if we reload it on the version on GitHub, finally, we should see that we have Bo at the beginning and we have, you know, the merge changes from those two places. So that's sort of like the worst case scenario when you make changes to the same part of the file and there's a conflict and you have to fix it by hand. Normally, especially if it's just you working on a project, then, you know, it basically just all works magically and it automatically merges changes and all of that and it works fine. But basically when it doesn't work fine, it's not that bad. And it's better than, you know, losing a change because somebody overwrote something in a file. Okay, so I'm over time and I apologize. I was watching the clock, but then I lost it. So that's all for today, and we'll try to get all the stuff sorted out in the tutorial session tomorrow. Thank you very much.